the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome back to an episode of the CBP, the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, here on the invincible, untouchable CBP Media Network. My name is Joey. I'm here as always with my co-host Len. And Len, here on this Easter Monday, the price of Bitcoin is no longer 27K. It has risen. How are you doing over there? What's going on?
Well, if it passed 28K, that's what I want to hear. Everything is good. Joey, the weather finally turned for the better. The price of Bitcoin finally turned for the better. How can we go wrong? This is a wonderful day. I actually went out and played some tennis with my daughter. What a great day it was.
That's dope, man. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I was out with my dog a couple times today. We did a 7K, did a little walking after the afternoon was kind of wrapping up. It feels good, man. It feels like in Canada, everyone hits their stride here in the spring around the same time after the Easter long weekend. All these lost connections in your brain just suddenly reestablishing themselves now that it's not dark at 5 o'clock and it's, you know, 20 degrees. So I don't know. I'm thinking maybe this week, Len.
Not I'll quite be going, 20.
It's 20 today. It's 20 today. It's 20 today.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's it's 60-ish, 70-ish for the American folks out there.
Nice. And it's supposed to be 24 Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So I think probably I'll go run the escarpment at lunch, maybe Wednesday, maybe Thursday, probably not both, maybe two of the 3 days. Can't beat it, man. There's no better way to spend your lunch hour than getting a sweat. So
I have I will tell you after show what's the better of the two, I think, but we'll talk about that later on. Sure. But Joey, it's been an eventful week in the news. But before we go anywhere, we do have a sponsor.
We do. We should. Easy DNS.
Yeah.
What is there to say really about Easy DNS? Marcus hooked us up with a Noster relay. Okay, we have a Noster relay.
No, we have a NIPO 5. We don't have a relay. Relay may be coming in.
I don't know anything about this. I'm just talking. Yeah, I'm just talking.
We got NIPO 5.
Put it in the show notes. We'll issue a correction after the show. Okay, it's a NIPO 5. We got one of those, whatever it is.
A trio of them.
We got a website that's coming as soon as Len writes his own introduction. Len and I are actually going to see each other tomorrow. Thing that we're doing not far from here. And during that meeting, I will give him his Easy DNS shirt that I've had sitting at my house for the better part of, I don't know, I guess 4 months now. And Len will give me my Canadian Bitcoiners podcast shirt, which he's had sitting at his house for the better part of 12 months now. So interesting stuff. Anyway, if you're looking for a place to host a website, and a bunch of you have been asking me, is there a promo code? I want to sign up for Easy DNS. I'm thinking about doing some website stuff. I don't know. I forget. I asked Mark today. I don't know if he told us or not. I didn't look at the chat after I asked. But if you sign up for Easy DNS, tell Mark you came from CBP and he'll hook you up, man. He'll hook you up. That's the least he could do. And he's a friend of ours. And so he's a friend of yours. And you'll be uncancelable on Easy DNS or as close to it as you can be, which is why we align with Mark and why we think he's a great sponsor and an OG Bitcoiner, of course, takes Bitcoin for the service and has for quite some time. So you can't beat it, man. You can't beat it. Len. Before we get into the boost, some housekeeping. Last week on the CBP, big ass week. We had our meetup announcement last Monday, for which we'll be giving away 5 more seats tonight. I will level with you here. Unless the random name generator keeps the names, I lost all the names from last week already. So, nope, they're all still there. Perfect. Okay, never mind that. We're going to give away 5 more seats tonight. It's on May 6th, probably in the early afternoon. Two o'clock till 5, something like that. And we'll probably go for dinner somewhere after if you guys really want to. I'm not paying, but you can come. Then last week we had two Wednesday shows in addition to the flagship. One with Kevin Rook on All Things Lightning. Sick show. Len, I watched that show live while I was getting ready for Preston's show. Great.
Want to thank Tom Kraza for hooking us up with Kevin Rook. Just want to give him a shout out for that.
Yeah,
and
great.
Well, for
great
the second program. Show, go on because I want to give somebody a shout out for the next.
Yeah,
part.
Sure. Preston Pish and I had a pretty good discussion on Wednesday night as well. And yeah, Len, who do we have to thank for that intro?
BTC Van City. So thank you very much to that account. I assume it's just one person for hooking us up with Mr. Preston Pish. So thank you to him.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Preston was great. It was a pleasure to talk to that guy. He's a really big part of my formative Bitcoin journey. So outstanding. This week, I'll be talking to Mark Goodwin, who works at Bitcoin Magazine. Mark and I did Why Are We Bullish together in the summer last year. Maybe it was like in the fall. I really like Mark's way of thinking on a lot of stuff on Nash, on game theory. And he's got a book coming out called The Bitcoin Dollar, which we're going to be talking about as well. So interested in hearing his take. The Bitcoin Dollar, I mean, if there's ever a time to think about what's next for global currencies and stuff like that, it's now. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him. And I think that's about it for housekeeping this week. And of course, if you haven't already, check out the Axis of Easy podcast, which releases on our feed and also on its own feed and is on YouTube as well. I want everyone to have a look at that, enjoy it. And, if you get suggestions for this show, that show, keep them to yourself. We don't care. Anyway, Len, what's going on your side of things?
Well, I just want to rhyme off the fountain boost that came in. Thank you to everybody that has provided them. And if you're not listening to us on Fountain, why not? You're going to be collecting sats simply by doing so. It seems like an easy choice to make for you, but the heck do I know? Start off with Second Breakfast, who writes in, if anyone is curious on running a LN node, BTC Sessions has some great tutorials. Yes, he does. Better off with a mini PC rather than a Raspberry Pi, along with a 2 terabyte hard drive. Been running a mine node for a couple of years now, all thanks to Ben's tutorials. Yeah, you can certainly use just about anything, an old PC just lying around, an old Mac even, and you could probably do the same thing. It may not be as efficient energy-wise, I'm guessing, because Raspberry Pi is really rather lean with the energy draw, but you know what? You can still do it. We have JPEG81 says, for the Kevin Rook interview, great interview on the state of Lightning. Thank you. For the CJ interview you had, great discussion and interview. That's from Outlander, BC. I wonder if he is in British Columbia.
Gotta be.
The ruler's broken. With Joey interviewing Pish on the same night, this rip gave me some Owen Hart vibes. Less glamour than Big Brother Brett, but like Owen, this one was rock solid. And we all know what happened on WrestleMania 10. Hopefully he's not calling you a nugget. Certainly not. And going on, somebody writes in for the Preston Pish interview. So his name is 81AC. It's just a random bunch of links. Preston always brings the fire. Great interview. BTC Mick Boatface, he's written in before. I love podcast crossover episodes with respect to Kevin Rook. Rander writes in, sorry, I couldn't boost more sats, boys. I didn't file my income tax to receive my benefits. And I'm also getting shafted by the federal carbon tax. Absolutely love it. Bobo Tummy, great show, loaded up on Kenya Bucks today because we were talking about the Kenyan shilling last week. And Norman Remnant writes in, shout out to BTC Van for the PP hookup. Again, thank you to BTC Van for that.
Can I do one more shout out here? I got a message from the Sharona who came on to talk to us a little bit on the 1 year anniversary episode. He is eating a bowl of popcorn waiting for us on stream there. He sent me that at 5 to 7 when I was restarting my computer for technical difficulties. So
was he the guy from Nigeria?
Yeah, get your popcorn ready, man. Everyone's got to get their popcorn ready. Follow Sharona's lead, man.
All right, Joey. Let's just go right to the price of Bitcoin because it's been a magical day at the price.
It feels good to say it today. It's $29,707 right now, US dollars.
Canadian, $40,022. Throw in one more. Singapore dollars, $39,480.
The Singapore dollar.
Might as well toss that sucker in too. It's not a long-standing joke. Joey, again, we'll pivot. I'll pivot wherever you want me to go. You want to do Bitcoin-related news first or Clown World? Whatever you want.
Let's do whatever you have the New York Times piece in. Whatever I want to start there. I want to talk about that piece if we could.
Yeah, we could certainly do that. That's more into Bitcoin related news, and I have this under a Bitcoin FUD topic. And well, before we even talk about that, there's something else that just came up in, you know, if we're talking about chronological order. An anti-Bitcoin mining bill was passed by the Senate in Texas, and it was unanimously approved. Now it has to move over to the House in order to get approved before it could potentially become state law. And the Senate Bill 1752, it seeks to reverse existing incentives, which are trying to attract miners to Texas. The state is noticing that to the Texas mining power consumption has recorded a 75% increase in the last 12 months. And the program currently rewards miners for feeding power back to the grid when there is high demand. And funny enough, this bill came out just after the Arkansas bill of the right to passage Bitcoin mining was passed over there. So it seems to be there's competing narratives between states. Nonetheless, let's go over to New York Times article because it kind of highlights what I touched on earlier with respect to Bitcoin mining. And the article does talk about the Texas winter storm of 2021 and knocked out the grid. It was really taxing over there with respect to energy draw. And all the while, miners were still doing their business. And one miner in particular, they said, was incentivized $175,000 per hour to divert energy. Instead of mining Bitcoin, send it to the grid. And they talked about how much draw these mining operations do. One, it does 73,000 homes. That's the equivalent draw for one of these Bitcoin miners. Another one does 97,000 homes. And Riot does 300,000 homes in terms of their energy draw. Riot is relatively large. And they say that the additional power used across the country can also cause carbon pollution as much as adding 3.5 million cars, gas-powered cars, to American roads. But it's kind of funny because they're talking about this and they're equating this to carbon usage and so forth. But I did some digging too. New York Times allowed General Electric to take out some massive ads this past December. And General Electric spun off into three different companies. And one of them is GE Aerospace. And GE Aerospace is a top engine aircraft engine supplier. They offer engines for the majority of commercial aircrafts and so forth. And everybody knows that aircraft travel is the most efficient way of traveling. In fact, a lot of studies have shown long distance travel, if you're comparing cars versus airplanes, cars is way more efficient. So they're just basically pissing this whole argument away. They're picking and choosing their arguments. They'll take money from anybody, it seems, as long as they're willing to pay write the check and sign off the name there, that it's good for them. But the reality is this piece here, this guy could be the no coiner of the week too. I'm not going to make him my no coiner of the week, but it's just another attack on Bitcoin mining operations. Sure, it draws a lot of energy, but so does the banking sector. So does the military, which props up your way of life. Right. No mention of this. Absolutely none. But go ahead, Joey. If you want to rip on this, be my guest.
I do, because the one thing I've said a bunch of times, and I'm going to say it again now, is that the more energy Bitcoin uses, the more adoption and support it has, broadly speaking, and no other fiat currency or system of enforcement can say that. And, you know, we're seeing now the problems with USD at scale and the issues that are coming up with the petrodollar, the protection contracts, which I'm sure we'll talk about when we get to France. But the Riot team, about an hour and a half ago then, put out a little news piece here, 5:18 p.m. Eastern, with 6 New York Times distortions, they're calling them, and their responses. And so I haven't read this all in its entirety yet. I'm going to put the link in the chat here for people to take a look. But this is one thing that I want to see more of. Much the same way that Bitcoiners don't take what's a good example, like government CPI numbers at face. And they don't take the stats about greenhouse gas emissions at face. We shouldn't be taking anything New York Times writes at face. And we have the platform now with guys like Pierre Rochard, who is apparently a comedian. Did you see the video he put out today? No. About Len? This is an all-time great video. Maybe we'll play it in the after show. It is so funny. If you haven't seen it, you got to go to Pierre's. It's either on Riot's Twitter or Bitcoin Magazine's. I forget now, but it is so good. And Pierre tweeted it out today. Finally, a real scientist doing real research. And it's him walking in a field with a CO2 measuring unit. Mm-hmm. And he's like, look at these plants. They're eating CO2 and emitting oxygen. This is good. He's like, look, it's 500 parts per million or whatever, very low. And then he goes to the mining facility inside and he stands right by the miners. And in the mine facility, it's lower. And he's like, this must mean that these miners are actually doing more for the CO2 in the air than the plants are. They're definitely not emitting CO2. We need to try at least one other place. And he goes another place in the plant. And he's like, look, they're not emitting any CO2. And people are making the point correctly in the comments of the tweet and in the video and in all the other, you know, places you can talk about this on Twitter, that the miners don't emit CO2. They just use energy. And people are saying, well, that's like saying cars don't, or EVs don't use energy because they don't, all the production is done somewhere else. And people are like holding their heads in the comments, like, yeah, man, that's what we've been saying for a long time. These are external combustion engines. They're using the same amount of power. They're using the same amount of, you know, nonsense that everyone says Bitcoin miners are guilty of using. It's insane. And I'm glad to see Riot taking a stance on this. Pierre's got a huge following on Twitter. We've had him on the show. I'm happy to promote this message on our platform, and I hope other people do it too, because you all know someone who thinks Bitcoin mining is a major culprit for pollution. It is not. You all know someone who thinks Bitcoin mining energy is energy wasted.
We lost you for a second there, Joey.
Sorry. We all know somebody who thinks that Bitcoin mining energy is energy wasted. It's not. And I just think, like, man, we have now the tools, the research and all this to fight back. One other thing I want to note here, Mike Hobart and a few others have been asking for this. What is it? The watt hour or something like that? Company that
watt hours?
Yeah. Well, this watt hour is a company that did the report for the New York Times about where the energy for Bitcoin mining comes from. And they go through a number of different companies, Riot among them, obviously. And everyone's saying, you know, what were the measuring sticks, were the metrics, the mechanism you used to pull this data? This data is wrong. We have data that we've been using for a long time. The Bitcoin Mining Council obviously has been prominent in that regard, trying to tell people, hey, look, whether or not you think consumables are important, we're using them. And when it comes to stuff like peaker plants, as someone was saying in the chat, I think it was Boomer, don't forget, peaker plants, which is basically what Bitcoin mining replaces, this idea that you can be a demand response when the grid is under pressure. Peaker plants are big money, man. A lot of people are invested in that, including Berkshire Hathaway. You mentioned General Electric, I'm sure has some hands in that pie too. I like the way that we're handling this so far. We should not take a backseat to this. Texas was supposed to be the place where Bitcoin mining could flourish. And right now, Len, it's under attack big time. You mentioned the bill there. Preston,
it can still flourish.
Last week. Yeah, it can, but
the incentives may be gone, but there's no...
It's under attack. And sure. So my suggestion would be that, you know, maybe there's more attacks coming. This, in my view, people have been talking about this hit piece for a while. Dennis Porter for sure has been mentioning it, but I look at like the quality of the piece, and actually Julian Kinetic Finance is here kind of saying the same thing. Like it's all just wrong. There is no smoking gun, to your point, Julian. We were kind of rhyming through some of the stuff that was wrong. This is pretty weak. And my fear is that there's more coming. And it seems like the strategy is not really to point to one or two data points that will turn people off to Bitcoin mining, but rather to just flood the zone with bullshit and hope that some of it sticks. And this is the stance that the media takes all the time. Now, again, we've said this many times. We're big fans of Gelman Amnesia on the show. If you're still reading New York Times for other topics, hoping to get expertise, I would say that this should raise some red flags for you when you turn the page to, you know, the war in Ukraine, Israel, Palestine, modern economics, the strength of the dollar, China, Taiwan, you name it. These guys are slanted at the very least and bought, paid for, and incompetent at the worst. And that's a cocktail that you're used to now in modern media, but it's not one we should accept. So don't accept it.
Yeah. And then you touched upon electric cars, how they are external combustion cars. And nobody's complaining about the power that is being put into their cell phones, their computers, and as you mentioned, electric cars, because they all draw from the same power source that does these miners, depending on which jurisdictions they operate in. So if people are upset that Bitcoin miners draw energy, well, people will have to take a good look at their lifestyle and potentially make a change into using less, if not zero energy, because that's the only way to not be a hypocrite. And yes, you were saying that it's Bitcoin mining is under attack in Texas, but this type of narrative plus the bill that passed in the Senate, I'm going to talk more about the bill that passed in the Senate. That's just for simply incentives. Now, one could make an argument then it's going to make it less likely to attract Bitcoin miners, but you could still operate over in the state of Texas. This could be the first step into potentially banning it, but we're not exactly sure what's going to happen in the future. So incentives is very much a fiat type of program, because you can't have an incentive in a true proof of work Bitcoin-backed society. You'd have to it's impossible to do so. So this is very fiat-like. So it works right now, but in the future, will it work any further? I don't know. I doubt it.
How do I feel about this take you just put out
there? Well, it's very fiat because you're going to have to create something to give to somebody. You're not going to give them a hard asset because you'll eventually run out of the hard assets. You're going to have to give them something that will be promised in the future. rather than what is today. So it's
Maybe you should be the guest on a Wednesday show and we can
no.
We can do this take.
I'll give you one other take though.
Okay.
Bitcoin mining. Right now, this is what they should be saying. What is wrong with it?
And the miners, the miners broadly, like the companies or like home miners. Who are we talking about?
Well, maybe the companies is a good angle. That's another thing I didn't think of right now. So that's another good one. But the one I'm thinking of, as Bitcoin mining becomes more profitable, as the price of Bitcoin goes up, as we all believe it does, the incentives then for the energy producer to sell the energy to consumers like you and I and everybody listening to this, it's lessened, and they would potentially sell more of the energy to Bitcoin miners because they could pay more for that same energy. So if you're a energy producer, you're going to try to maximize your profit. And if somebody's going to buy the energy at a much higher cost, they could price you and I out. This is what I perceive what potentially may happen. I can't say this is it's a reality. It's just something I could foresee that somehow you're going to have, I dare to say this is maybe not the right word, but it sucks, but a regulation or a policy put in place to ensure that energy producers are able to provide us as consumers with the energy rather than provide it to Bitcoin miners that could maybe buy it at a much higher price. Now, you're by doing this, you're distorting the market, and that's obviously the wrong thing. I don't know what is the best way around this. Build more power producing generator, plants and so forth. I don't know. It's very costly and time consuming, but this is what I see. Maybe something they could hang their hat on and saying, we're going to have less slice of the pie because they'll be able to sell the energy at a higher price and make more money to sell to Bitcoin miners instead of you and I when we're paying 10 cents a kilowatt hour, whatever the hell we're paying these days. Thoughts?
Yeah. I like it. I like it. I'm into that. We're at sort of a precipice here, right? Because I think we've done, I don't want to say we've done all we can do as far as like the calm strategy, but we're getting close here. Like we've led the horse to water, right? Basically, I think it's safe to say that whether it's local governments, federal governments, whether it's people who don't understand the purpose of the sort of point of proof of work, we've done as much as we can, I think, as far as explaining the why. And so now at some point you just have to have people either get it or not get it. And Preston mentioned this last week, and I think it's something we don't talk about often enough, Len. It's not just hearing the right information. It's hearing the right information from the right people. So maybe the next thing we got to think about as a community is who are the right people? Are the right people guys like Porter, Pierre, who are working with legislators? Are the right people guys, or even girls like Nat Brunel, who's doing a lot of stuff on Fox these days, trying to get the word out about Bitcoin and the you know the nature of the Bitcoin fit. I don't know who the right people are. Maybe it's you and me. I don't know. But you know the thing that I think we have to start thinking about is making sure the message, whether it's you know Natalie or Preston or Pierre or whoever, Dennis or others, Marty, Matt, the point is that the message has to be consistent. And part of me, Len, when I see stories like this, my instinct now is to kind of just laugh it off and ignore, like I would with any other New York Times story. But this is too important. The feedback is just, you know, the feedback on the New York Times story, the comments, the very few comments they get here, as Julian and I were talking about in the chat, you know, that account is basically a spam account at this point. It's like all bots who are following it. But the comments are like, shut crypto down. It's a scam. It's gambling. It's casino. It's you know, its only purpose now is to inject FUD into the U.S. dollar system, into the U.S. economy, into U.S. politics. And people shouldn't have that view. And so I want them to come around, but at what cost? You know, how much am I willing to give to this? How much should we be willing to give? I don't know. But these are things that we're going to have to talk about soon. Boomer mentioning another name in the chat, Natalie Smolinski, who's done a lot of good work on Bitcoin especially in the last year. I've tried to get her on the show. She won't answer my tweets, but maybe I'll have to try again. Lot of good people in finance, in Bitcoin, in economics, in energy, making this case. Max Cagliardi is another one. I think he's very well spoken and understands Bitcoin and the why, and comes from the energy side as well. He's not a hodler. He's not a native hodler, although he is a hodler now, of course. But yeah. Anyway, thinking out loud here. Interesting times as always. We will keep an eye on this and talk about it on the show. But you should read the article. I will post it one more time in the chat here, just in case I didn't post it.
Well, the timing of this seems rather suspect, because now if you look at the Treasury Department, they came out this past week. They say they're taking aim at DeFi and decentralized crypto. Now, we all know Bitcoin is not DeFi, and we make our, you know, we propose our level best when we're saying that we're not crypto. Bitcoin is not crypto. But a lot of people, they kind of mesh these all together. And with the Treasury Department coming out with saying this, along with what this the Senate's bill in the state of Texas, plus this New York Times article, and what's been going on with the SEC, but they're attacking, of course, shitcoins that are deemed to be securities. But it just seems rather coincidental that all this
Fed,
is happening.
Fed now as well. People talking about Fed now. It's and the Fed, you know, is talking about how it's a payment rail. It's anything but a CBDC. Anon, don't worry about it. And
it is. It is not a CBDC.
You're right.
And I'm going to fight that one tooth and nail.
Okay, but do you think you know, Len? That's a pretty nice rail for something that could look a lot like a CBDC inside of 5 years, 3 years.
It's a CBDC as much as Bitcoin is crypto.
The infrastructure is starting to show up. It's starting to take shape, right? And so you're right. The timing is a little sus, as the kids would say. I don't know. Like I personally don't have a problem with the DeFi because the nature of the attack on DeFi from regulators is pretty straightforward. Those are securities. You're issuing securities. SushiSwap on the weekend, great example, right? On Easter Sunday, there was like a huge SushiSwap hack I saw. And the decentralized platform decided to, what was it, freeze or draw back or something like that, the network, until they could fix some of these holes. That's you're sort of giving yourself up if you do something like this. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of the cases that the SEC or whatever regulatory body, whether it's in Europe, whether it's one of the countries in Europe or in America or here over in Canada, the case they're going to make is, look, if I go back in your Discord chats, if I go back in your tweets, if I go back in your protocol, am I going to see that you guys froze the platform? Am I going to see that you guys took unilateral action to fix a problem? Am I going to see that you did something that makes you the group who the investors are relying on to grow the value of the token? If we do, then you're a security, and that'll crush the value of these things. The entire point, at least in their eyes, is to get out of the system, to become outside money, right? As Zoltan would say. But the truth of the matter is, the only outside money is Bitcoin and gold. That's it. There's other metals, maybe commodities, if you want to talk about oil and some of the other stuff. But like the outside money that's available to everybody isn't fucking SushiSwap, man. It's Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin, and that's it. You know, if you want to buy a gold wafer, fine. I guess that's okay too. But I think you're seeing now in the price action in you know, broader markets, is a greater understanding that outside money has a role to play. And like, I'm sure we'll talk about this in the US dollar, but I'll say it here. Maybe we can get into the France thing right after this, unless you have some other.
I have a bunch more. There's a lot of Bitcoin-related news.
Okay, let's go there, and then we'll talk about France after. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here.
Well, MicroStrategy this past week purchased another 1,045 Bitcoin. That was for $29.3 million. Now, they hold 140,000 Bitcoin, give or take a few, which is not a bad sum. And the average Bitcoin buying price is $29,803. They're getting awfully close to the average price point where they're going to be now in above that rather than below that. For a long time, they were below that. And a lot of people were like saying, look at this shitty purchase.
Yeah.
Like Schiff and everything. But you know what? Eventually, if they hold on to it and continually buy in at a lower price, DCA, well, this is what happens. And this followed. This is a previous purchase a previous purchase was done back in March. I believe it was March, 6,455 Bitcoin. They bought that at 23,000. That was the average buy-in at that time. Keep in mind, too, MicroStrategy, and this is, I'll give you kudos because you gave this information. Some companies are buying into them. Bank of America, Fidelity, they purchased over 75 million worth of stock of MicroStrategy stock in Q1. So it looks like some big players are taking notice. Maybe they saw this at a undervalued stock and they decided to buy it and sell it later on. But indirectly, Bank of America, Fidelity, and others have exposure to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Huge grab in Q1, right? I'm surprised to see that, honestly. Where are those shares going? B of A holds them on whose behalf? Well, I don't understand what they're like. Why are they buying them? That to me is like enemy at the gate. Let's hop on. Like, I don't understand what the point of that is for B of A.
Well, it's simply an asset. If they believe it's undervalued and they think they can make a buck in a few days or a few weeks, a few months.
If they think it's undervalued, they have to think that Bitcoin's about to turn. Because MicroStrategy's, you know, FCFs are not blowing anyone's socks off. It's not like they're making a ton of money over there selling you know, purchasing software.
They're a pseudo Bitcoin spot.
You know what I'm saying? It's an ETF. Yeah. So, you know, B of A kind of giving up the goods there.
And Fidelity. No, let's not throw away Fidelity. There's another big one out there. That's
Fidelity's playing at a different level, right? They're offering buying, selling, custody. So yeah, the big guys are there and they're hard to turn off. That's what even Preston said that last week. You know, if you're worried about FUD, think about the guys who are just beyond being told what to do by the White House, hopping onto this stuff, going in with 2 feet. It's good to see. But again, don't get fooled. I think as the price of Bitcoin grows, the encouragement from the system, right, is going to be to hold vehicles that are not Bitcoin, to hold ETFs, to hold MSTR, to hold spot, futures contracts and things like this, and just not to hold the underlying. Don't fall into this trap. This is what happened to gold. No one knows now how much gold is in the world. The leverage in gold is greater than anything we have ever seen. The paper gold is greater than anything we know. I would just say, don't get lured into buying the stuff that's easier that you can grab in like your stock trading app. Learn how to buy and hold Bitcoin yourself. It's the way to go.
Well, you know what? With that, let's move to the next Bitcoin-related topic, Sparrow. They released version 1.7.4. That includes border wallets.
I love
memorizable seeds.
I love it.
A bundle tour update on all platforms. Auto-suggest for the last BIP39 were dark mode and more. This is a very... using Sparrow works very well with Cold Card and other seed signers out there. Joey, if you want to run with this, I know that you were very hyped on this one.
I don't know enough about the border thing yet, but the border thing, Len, is so slick. If you guys have Sparrow on your computer, like I don't have it on this computer, but if I did, I would pull it up. The border thing is basically for people who are in distress, need to get out quickly with keys, but don't want to remember the words. Sparrow will give you a grid based on seed words, right? From the BIP39 list. And you can pick a pattern in the grid to remember instead of the words. And then when you restore the wallet, whenever you land your destination, you're safe, whatever, your family's safe, the war's over, blah, blah, blah. You load up Sparrow, you pull up the same grid, and you pump in the pattern. It is so slick. I'm going to try and do it one day, Len. Maybe I'll finally pop my OBS cherry and make a video. I'll ask Julian in the chat how to use OBS or you how to use OBS finally and make a video on this, but it's such a good idea. And as we, again, not to like, you know, raise fear or sound the alarm here, but as we enter into an era, I think where you will for sure have to answer more questions about your Bitcoin holdings than you ever have before. There's a guy who we know, Len, who I won't dox on the show, owns a Bitcoin company who got an audit from the CRA. And have you seen this already? Am I breaking news to you here? So I've seen this.
I wasn't going to report it because I didn't know how to. I didn't know how truthful it is, and I didn't want to say who it came from.
He says it's legit. Came from the federal government here, and they're asking him for admin access to his tax software to look at his books, and they're asking him to declare any ownership of crypto or Bitcoin for wallets which he controls.
There's two things, and I've been talking about this for a little bit of a while. There's two things that people should be, I don't condone this because this is wrong. KYC free Bitcoin. You buy it from a place that you can get KYC free Bitcoin, number one. Number two, when you mine Bitcoin, that's virgin coin. That's even better than the KYC that you buy, whatever, because that's fucking virgin coin. You have to report this, obviously. You shouldn't be not reporting this to government. That is wrong, because reporting it to the government is the way to do it. But for people that don't do it, you're going to fly under the radar and nobody will ever know it. You have it. Make sure you practice good UTXO management. Don't mix that with KYC Bitcoin, or else you're just defeating the whole purpose.
Yeah. Speaking of privacy, if you're a CoinJoin aficionado, you can use the code THX_Finch this week on Sparrow. Actually, it's any Whirlpool mix. You can use that. I think it's 25% off the mixing fee, which is great. So if you have some coins to move or you want to do a little obfuscation, you can for pretty cheap. Anyway,
and it's no kick to us. It's a general code. Just in case somebody's wondering, like, we're not shilling this code.
No, not at all. Samurai doesn't pay us. Whirlpool, whatever. Sparrow doesn't pay us. I just like the service and I've used it before. So yeah, I mean, anyway, the border wallets thing, I'm going to brush up, like I was just saying in the chat, on exactly what the restoration mechanism is. But Len, you gotta try this. You gotta see it to believe it. It is so good and takes away some of the it's like a, it would take away a point of friction, right? Because people, I think, are worried, oh, if I have to leave or whatever, like, how am I going to get my seed words out, my hardware wallet? Like, everyone's going to know what it looks like. And you're right. Chances are, in a place and time where you have to leave and there's a consideration around how you're going to get your Bitcoin out, everyone's going to know what those things look like and they're going to be looking for them. So how do you do it? This is how. And man, oh man, is it ever a tight looking application for the grid memorization mechanism. I love it. I'm going to think some more about this, and kudos to the Sparrow guys, to Craig Raw and team there. Killer, killer, killer edition. Sparrow just continues to deliver, dude. It's a great app. I've really enjoyed using it so far.
Three more stories. I leaving a few off on a cutting room floor. Apple, some interesting news. There's an Easter egg included with all their Mac OS versions since 2018. A technologist by the name of Andy Bayo. I'm not sure if he has any relation to Scott Bayo, but anyways, on April 5th, a blog post from Mr. Bayo said that you could type in a particular command in, I guess, the command prompt. I'm not exactly sure. I don't have a Mac. But if you do so, the Bitcoin white paper will appear. So somebody or some people have included the Bitcoin white paper in all versions of Mac OS since 2018. Now, the mainstream media has been dubbing this as, quote, the Bitcoin manifesto, end quote. It just seems like it's the wrong terminology. This is not a political statement. We're not trying to do anything. It's just basically, it's the starting point of something, and it's just basically outlining what is Bitcoin. So Bitcoin manifesto, it kind of rubs me the wrong way. But another thing to point out is people are then wondering now, is Steve Jobs Satoshi? I don't believe that's the case, but I could be wrong. I have no way to prove that. I don't believe that's incorrect. If you look at the timing, Steve Jobs passed away the same year which Satoshi disappeared. Now, there's a few months different between the two, a few dates, but it
are
just
you suggesting seems, this is a bit of a Tupac and Cuba situation?
I don't buy this. This is what some people are saying. So I don't. And if Tupac's in Cuba, good for him. Hopefully, I don't want to go there. And the last thing I want to say about this story, it's certainly just an Easter egg, but looks like Dr. Wright is going to get litigious about this. And if he's going to take on the Mac team, their legal team, good luck, because they're lawyered up to the tits and they'll be able to defend any argument that they have because they have the capacity to do so. So good luck to Dr. Wright for this endeavor if he indeed tries to do so. So any thoughts on this, Joey?
Yeah, I do. Just one big one. Copyrights. So little background here. Okay. There's two companies that will famously drop a meteor on your fucking dome if you ever infringe even a little bit on any of their intellectual property. One is Nintendo. The other is Disney. And those companies come down so hard on anyone who even draws a picture of Super Mario or NBA. Draws a picture. NBA too, maybe? Okay. Mm-hmm. Disney and Nintendo, I know, are famously litigious when it comes to their IP and their copyright. So the reason this is important to consider, and the reason that this relates to the story, is that copyright law is very interesting because of the fact that if you get a copyright, it's not enough to protect the copyright. You have to defend your copyright every time you know that someone's infringing. Otherwise, you lose it. And so Craig right now is in a bit of a jam, I think, because I believe that he will have to do something about the white paper in the software. I don't know how that looks. I'm obviously not a lawyer. You're obviously not a lawyer. Maybe there's a lawyer in the crowd who can help us. But my understanding is that because of the nature of copyright defense and copyright litigation, he's got to do something. He has to try and defend it against Apple. And, you know, I think Len, you and I both know how that would go, but I'm curious about this. I think it's an, you know, potentially important development hiding in a Mac OS Easter egg. I'm all for it. I haven't tried it on my terminal yet. I have a Mac upstairs. I haven't fired it up yet. Maybe I'll try it later tonight.
Do it on a video and post it so we could expand our audience. Two more stories. I'll rip through this one hopefully quickly. Compass Mining in Canada got some bad press. I'm not sure if you heard about this one. They have obviously locations throughout the world, and they have a few locations in Canada that you could have mining done. They host it in these locations. Well, if you're using the mining services within Canada, they're asking for those users to, well, provide KYC information to the Canadian governments. And this whole defeats the purpose of mining Virgin Coin. So essentially, there was an email sent out is asking for the customer to fill out necessary information, and it contains the customer's attestation about the residency information. So they want to know who it is, where they reside, and from that, they could probably draw connections on how much Bitcoin was mined. Compass, they have had a lot of bad press in the past little while. They had issues with moving mining equipment within Canada, and that caused some massive delays. They also had the whole debacle with the Russian miners mining equipment just prior to the war. And so, yeah, a lot of things going on over there. In fact, we had their CEO that was on our show, but he then resigned or pushed out shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
Just bad timing. And yeah, so there you go. Not your miners. You're having somebody else mine it for you. You're going to be potentially rugged. And here's another one. They're asking people to KYC themselves. That's fucking nuts.
Shotgun KYC on hosted mining is nuts. And so we talked on the show a bunch about ways to get or reasons to get KYC. Like, you got to dance around this so much now. It's actually just crazy, but there is going to be a premium on KYC free Bitcoin. And I think that everyone knows where this is going. There's ways to get Bitcoin that's very low KYC. Certainly it won't be attributable to you if you buy it, vis-a-vis these vehicles. And I think, Len, you know, it may be time to consider something like this, but everyone's mileage will vary. The cost of this Bitcoin is going to be a little higher, of course, and there's other considerations as well. So I would just say keep your eyes open, man. People who think that there's not going to be regulatory clampdowns, you know, you're really seeing them here at an accelerating pace, Canada, US, and European countries as well. So, Len, I just think it's time to consider how have you been treating your Bitcoin? How have you been treating your UTXOs? How have you been treating your change from mixing? How have you been treating all this stuff? You got to start thinking about it, period. And there's not a lot of good resources out there yet. And the UI is getting more friendly, but it's not there for the, you know, new-ish Bitcoiner. So yeah, start thinking about it. That's all I'll say.
Last Bitcoin-related story I just want to bring up. This is pretty funny. The Bitcoin miner called Sphere3D, they mine a small amount of Bitcoin generally on a given month. Well, they have a partner called Griffin Digital. And in fact, I've been trying to get the CEO of Griffin Digital on our show. They've been trying to go public, and well, we just haven't been able to find a date. But anyways, Sphere3D is suing their partner, Griffin Digital. Why? This is a funny one, Joey. For losing 500,000 of its Bitcoin in a spoofing attack. They allege that the Griffin CEO, Rob Chang, and that's the guy I've been talking to, actually, wired 18 Bitcoin of Sphere3D's Bitcoin, so 18 of them, to an address belonging to a fraudster who masqueraded as Sphere3D's chief financial officer. This was done in January, and then another 8 Bitcoin were sent to the same address a few days later. So essentially 24 Bitcoin was sent to somebody masquerading as somebody working for Sphere3D, and Rob Chang and his team were duped. And as a result, Sphere3D is asking for $500,000 in compensation. I thought this was kind of funny. I don't know why, but I just wanted to bring this up. It's never don't trust verify, I guess, is another example of that.
So does this mean Rob's not coming on the show? Like, is he?
I hope he does. I'd love it. But anyways, let's move on to Clown World news.
Wait, meetup May 6th. We gave away 5 seats last week. I want to give away 5 more tonight. So if you're going to be in the Hamilton, Oakville area, May 6th,
Burlington, Mississauga.
Anywhere around there, okay? Don't go crazy. Don't drive 3 hours to come talk to Len and I and everyone else. That's a long way. But if you're in the area, the Your Life, Your Terms guys are hosting a meetup, a joint meetup between us and them. It's going to be a lot of like-minded people, a lot of good Bitcoiners, a lot of good real estate people. And I guarantee you'll meet some kindred spirits, and we'll probably grab dinner and a drink after. At least I will. I won't speak for Len, but I think I'm stagged that weekend. So there's no point in me going right home afterwards. Anyway, if you are interested in going, drop your name in the chat. If we get more than 5 names, I'll just take the first 5. And then next week we'll do it again. And then probably the week after we'll do it again until we pull 20 or 25 names altogether. And we'll tell you the information the day that, or not the day, but in lead up to exactly the, you know, when all the information is available, I should say. Yeah. But we know it's going to be that day. It's going to be early afternoon, somewhere between 1 and 5, 2 and 5, something like that. So if you want to go, let me know. Put your name in the chat here. We're only doing it for people who are in the live chat for the draw.
For the time. Yeah. We'll extend it later on.
If we can.
And I just want to add to that, Joey, if you can't make it or you're kind of 50-50, don't put your name in there because you're potentially taking a slot away from somebody else. If you could commit to it and you want to go, do it. If you're kind of 50-50 because of timing, whatever, I would ask, just don't submit your name.
I'll add one more thing here. Somebody, I think I saw this on Twitter. Somebody said it to me somewhere. If you get your name drawn, it's not an invitation for you and your wife or you and your friend.
It's a solo.
It's for you. Because these guys are, we don't have that much room. And so as much as I'd love to meet all your wives, husbands, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, whatever, your dog, you can't do it. Sorry. Not this time. We'll do a bigger meetup, maybe at a bar or something in the future, and we can do it then.
This is the prelude to a bigger one.
Yeah. We're going to take the temperature here and see how this goes. And then, of course, if you want to come, put your name in the chat. I'll add it to the list. We'll go from there. Anyway, Len, Clown
World. Said it. Yeah. Oh, that was a long Bitcoin segment there. We had another big week in Clown World news. And gold, it looks like a lot of countries and central banks out there are snapping it up. Well, and China and Russia is no different. They're still doing the same old thing. In fact, China been buying a lot of gold and also at the same time getting a lot less exposure to the US dollar. And that's with less US treasuries on the books each passing month that is being reported. I'm wondering if this is going to ultimately lead to a petro yuan. I don't know. Anything is game. And another thing it's hard for me to grasp is there's a pegging right now. It's 6.9-ish yuan per US dollar. That's what around there they try to maintain it. Eventually, they're going to have to depeg this. What happens at that point is they're still very much dependent on exports from China to be imported in the United States. And if they break that peg, it's going to then impact how much business they can do, because obviously the yuan is going to increase in value. So this has to come out eventually because they can't maintain that peg to a currency that is going to continue to fall. So when that happens, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. It's going to be awesome to see what happens. But the stockpiling of gold, I just want to make note, by these central banks, it's happening at the highest rate since 1967. And it's notable that that was the year that the London gold pool collapsed. And because a lot of central banks were trying to defend the $35 an ounce, the gold price, and they were buying and selling en masse just to maintain that $35 an ounce thing. But then there were some doubts with the U.S. that they had to stockpile in order to meet all their obligations. And so central banks worldwide started to stockpile. As a result, the London gold pool reserves were depleted and the price of gold eventually spiked. So the same thing might be happening.
What happened after that? What happened after the price of gold spiked? Do you remember?
They defended the US dollar by cutting loose.
It was a defense of the dollar. Oh, okay.
So, you know, say what you want about gold. And I've lost a lot in faith of with gold, especially what's happened with Venezuelan gold and Russian gold not being able to be repatriated for whatever they've done. But still, gold is a proof of work system. You have to actually go out there. You have to expend energy. You have to expend time and effort to extract the gold from the earth. That's a proof of work system. Proof of stake is what we have right now with a fiat system with US dollar, Canadian dollar, and you name it. So the way I'm looking at this, they're stockpiling a proof of work and we just keep printing out the proof of stake stuff. And even Trump too has noted this past week that, quote, our currency is crashing and will soon no longer be the world standard, end quote. This is coming from a former president of the United States. This is damning text. This is a damning narrative from him. And they were even translating Tucker Carlson's monologue. And he was talking about what Trump said. And so Tucker Carlson's monologue was translated into multiple languages. It looks like one of the Asian languages, I think it was Korean, I could be wrong, but this was reported by the Woke Antidote. And thank you, SB, for that. So it looks like this is obviously big news. It's making worldwide headlines. And for those who think it's not going to happen, the US dollar crashing to the point where it's no longer a world currency, we could just recap. We have the Malaysian prime minister said there's no reason to continue to depend on the US dollar. Not that Malaysia is the be all and end all, but it's death by a thousand cuts. And they have enlisted the help of China to get there in terms of being less dependent on the US dollar. And that's through China's establishment of an Asian monetary fund with Malaysia. And it's a cool $39 billion, that's been agreed upon to invest in Malaysia. And I'm not sure exactly how strong the stablecoin market is, in Malaysia, but this is potentially going to rug that market, and as well as whatever US dollar holdings that their central bank may have. So less demand, more inventory out there. Well, the valuation goes the wrong way. And I'll just briefly go to France, and then I can throw it over to you, and then we could talk a few other things. France, we talked about last week, they were buying up LNG from China. And this week, the French president was, he's saying that Europe must reduce its dependency on the United States for weapons, energy, and the extraterritoriality of the U.S. dollar. Now, it's kind of similar to what Malaysia was saying, but this, he went a little more damning words here. And this is from a supposed ally. And World War One, World War Two, these are now distant memories at this point. I'm surprised it wasn't Italy first, because Italy typically turns sides before anybody else. So France for doing it, they rug pulled Italy in this. Good for them. Maybe this is the president of France just trying to stir up shit, because remember, they have protests going on at home. The country's financial, the finances are in ruin. And in fact, you could look at this. This stat alone shows you how bad things are in France. The four biggest French companies by market cap are all fashion brands. It's not financial. It's not fashion brands. That's trendy. This is stuff that could easily turn on a dime. So it's not, you're not sitting on sound footing here. And well, with all this being said, is it potential that France may join BRICS? I don't know. I don't think so, but you know, anything is possible these days. But consider that with the China manufacturing, Russian energy, this is big. You have India's tech, Brazilian football. That's fucking massive too. French fashion, throw that in the mix. If you throw in the Taliban joining with their fucking military strength, remember how fucking strong they are now after US is part of, you now have a recipe here for success. So I'm giving them the recipe. Get France, get Taliban, you're good to go. But nothing could stop them. But really, like, the last thing I want to say, even Mexico is turning their back on the United States. And he was saying that the United States doesn't have a good track record about talking shit, specifically like human rights, because he was mentioning Julian Assange being detained. And they were saying, don't talk about the cartel, because there's rumors that they were bombing, or they have bombed the Nord Stream pipeline. And lastly, he said, don't talk to Mexico about democracy, because they have just arrested or put, looks like there may be some charges that were laid against Donald Trump, a former president and now potential candidate for the next presidency. But it goes to show you there's a lot of allies there turning their back on the United States. This shit is happening fucking fast. Prepare yourself.
Everyone's a friend when things are going well. I have a less accelerationist view on this Macron US dollar thing. I think that he's talking specifically about not wanting to get wrapped up in Taiwan, China. And I understand why he's saying one of the reasons we need to distance ourselves from the US dollar, and specifically, as you mentioned, find some independence in energy and military defense armaments, things like that, is because if we don't, then we have to sort of get involved in these things as, you know, as a consequence of our reliance on the USD. We talked about this last week, that the US dollar is first and foremost a defense contract. We will come to your defense if you continue to support the US dollar, the US dollar regime around the world. The problem is that, as you mentioned, Macron is seeing kind of the fallout of this, right? You know, the dollar is not really working the way it used to. The entitlement system is kind of falling apart. We have to raise retirement ages. You know, the whole country's on fire for the better part of a month and a half now, I think, at this point. Although I haven't seen anything at the CBC. I'm at the gym all the time. The CBC, not a single montage or short video clip of the French Revolution there, 2023. So sad to see that. But, you know, the USD hegemony, I think that the thing we all agree on, and I'll bring it back to Pozar here a little bit with this inside-outside money thing from last year. This is the thing I can't figure out about the people who hate Bitcoin, okay? Everyone agrees that the dollar hegemon is wobbling. And it seems to me like more people than ever before agree that the writing is on the wall. This thing is about to, you know, the experiment's about to end. And I don't necessarily think that that means, at least for the people I'm talking about, that there's going to be, you know, incredible tumult around the world. There's going to be turmoil, death, destruction, despair, famine, plague, all these different things, right? I don't think we're talking sort of second coming level destruction and disaster. But when you have that many people agreeing, that the US dollar is reaching sort of its natural end. And maybe also the fiat system, this debt-based system, the big cycle, like Dalio calls it, is reaching its natural end. Why is it so hard for those people to think that maybe neutral non-state money is the next logical step? And even if you don't think it's the next logical step, even if you think there's better candidates, you might think it's gold, the petrodollar, some kind of commodity basket, some kind of new Eurozone with the BRICS countries, who knows? You may think it's any one of those things. But the idea that you can think that the dollar is almost done and that Bitcoin won't have a role to play, I think is insane. And you know, when all these countries are taking their shot at the US is as weak as it's ever been. There's no doubt the US is no longer a productive economy. The only wealth it creates are through, you know, CDS and government MBS trading. Yeah. Or
government funded creation,
or public sector or public funding or whatever. You know, and today Biden kind of in a fugue state again, saying he's not ready to announce whether or not he's running, but then he announces it like in the same 5 or 10 minute segment with some guy. Like, I mean, they've never been weaker. They're run by octogenarians. I would not be surprised. You know, there's a great clip that kind of embodies, I think, what most people think about folks like Nancy Pelosi. She's giving a speech at what's got to be a university or some kind of other, you know, think tank or academia adjacent institution. And some lady in the crowd is like, I came here hoping to heckle a warmonger and all I got was an old drunk. And I think a lot of people feel this way about the current set of leaders in the US. These guys had unbelievable opportunity to propel the United States forward. The Democratic United States project was so successful after World War II. Now you can argue about the ethics and the morals of that success. You can argue about how many backs they had to crush the world over for the last 100 years to make that success possible, but it was a success and they've completely squandered it. It seems to me, Len, in like the last 15 years, basically, right? You know, that was really the 15 years that destroyed not only the financial system, but just the confidence and the attitudes toward the United States around the world, whether it's their industry, their academic institutions, their innovation, all that stuff. It's just completely been destroyed. For a guy like, what's the leader of Mexico's name? Oh my goodness. Obrador? Is that his name?
I don't know.
Or maybe that's an old Mexican president. Forgive me on my Mexican presidential tree here. I don't know the history of all those fine folks. But for him to be taking shots at his, basically the cannon that defends his front door, is really something else. And there's an old graphic from World War II. I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called like the Long Airstrip or something like that, or the Continental Airstrip or the Allied Airstrip, where basically there was a sequence of nations going. If you look at a map, right, there's a sequence of nations going horizontally, so east to west and north to south vertically, where any allied country could basically fly a plane all the way across the globe, no matter which orientation they were using, no matter where they had to land. There was always a friendly country along that axis, and there was always friendly waterways along those axes. And now, Len, it's gone. And so this other story that's kind of brewing, obviously, with the China-Taiwan conflict and Russia-Ukraine conflict and potentially other countries, who knows what's going on in some of these other places. Those strategic gimmies, the stuff that they took for granted and we took for granted as one of the allied, I won't call us a power, but certainly we're allied with that group. Those things are no longer in place. And, you know, I think that people forget it was only 2 years ago that the mighty U.S. military was overthrown by guys who've been living in caves for 1,000 years in about a weekend. And to me, that really nullifies the confidence that any rational actor, any rational state should have in this U.S. dollar for defense implicit contract. And I think a lot of people are seeing that now and trying to get out, because if we in the Bitcoin space understand that the U.S. dollar is wobbling, traditional finance understands the U.S. dollar is wobbling, we all agree that this thing is on the way out. States also see this. And so they're not going to position themselves to be the last guy out the door. They will play with a foot out the door for as long as they have to. If the U.S. dollar somehow bounces back, then they're not all the way out. If it somehow fails, then they're not all the way in. And as a result, the dollar gets weaker and the relationships that kept the dollar strong get weaker as well. I would expect to see this accelerate, honestly, as stuff like Bitcoin takes off. I talked with Preston about this. We've talked about this on the show when it came to the Balaji bet. it's not about whether Bitcoin gets to a million. At some point, a rational person, you know, whether it's 75,000, 100,000, 150,000, a rational person is going to say, keep your Canadian dollars, keep your US dollars. When I render you services, when I sell you products, I want some portion of it in Bitcoin. When you get to that point, it's over. And it's not just over for the US dollar, maybe over for all the other currencies in the world too, because as many people are keen to point out, the US dollar would be the last one to fail. I don't think that's necessarily the case. My view is that if you look around the world, most of the other currencies have already failed. The Canadian dollar is 70 cents against the USD. We've talked about, you know, a number of other ones over the last 2 years. They're all headed the wrong direction. The Eurozone experiment is basically done. This stuff is all failing or closer to failing than we are willing to admit. And so when everyone says, well, the dollar is going to be the last one to fail, I would just say, I think that you maybe have too high a bar for complete failure. And we may already be seeing the beginnings of that. And it may be closer to shorter medium term than it is to long term. You know, also another guy I want to have on the podcast, Martin Armstrong, who's right about damn near everything with his Socrates algorithm. This guy thinks that most world governments are going to collapse by early 2032, 33. Have you heard of this guy? He does Mike's Money Talks a few times.
That's really fast. He's been right. That's a quick turnaround.
Len, he's been right about that stuff. Yeah, and I just think, like, again, maybe modern governments failing, quote unquote failing, is not necessarily Mad Max level stuff, but maybe it's their inability to provide entitlements. Maybe it's their inability to hold a clean election. Maybe it's their inability to provide policing or healthcare, even if people can pay for it. Stuff like that, right? What is a failed state? What does a failed state look like? I'm not sure. I don't think any of us really know. There's no clean definition for that. It's very much in flux. But we're getting closer to all those things being part of the conversation than we were in years past. So, you know, part of me wants to just hang out, stack, and you know, talk to you every Monday and every other Wednesday, talk to someone else. But I think Len, honestly, we may have to be more diligent and more involved in this than either of us want to be, which sucks, but at least we'll have some outside money, as it were. Very important.
Well, you know what? I will always preach. If people listen, great. If they don't, to be honest, Joey, I'm not going to lose any sleep because there's nothing I could do to change people's opinion or instill an idea in their minds. I could just talk about what I believe in, and I believe it to be true. May not be reality. I mean, what I think is going to happen may not be the case, but if people don't follow suit and try to get exposure in the stuff that cannot be confiscated, because remember, anything that you have that is deemed to be a desirable asset could be 6102'd. There's history is behind that. So do something that you can protect yourself just in case. We're talking about KYC-free Bitcoin. That's something that some people should consider. I would never recommend it because you have to report it to your government. That's just my opinion. US dollar, you could talk about it has failed. I'll argue to date it hasn't yet because we haven't gotten to the point of hyperinflation. I think that's 50% change over price in the given month. I think that's the correct. It's certainly failing in year over year, month over month, but it hasn't collapsed. Like, it's still usable in a you know, daily scenario. It's not like the Zimbabwe dollar where you get it, you had to spend it by as soon as you get it because it's burning a hole in your pocket. It's not quite there yet.
But we do that. We talked about this before. Like, this is the thing when people say dollar failure, you know, Len, even before Bitcoin, since Bitcoin, it's even worse for me. But before Bitcoin, I didn't keep cash. Basically everything I have went into either my house or
nobody did.
No, so this is what I mean. So what is dollar failure? Is it what you're talking about? You know, is having to rush out to buy eggs and milk? That seems to be failure to hold value. It already fails at that. That seems to me to be like this. That if that eggs and milk thing happens, it's already too late. And I feel like we're on the way to the eggs and milk thing.
We are on the way there, but yeah, we're not there because, with all due respect, none of us here, and I would imagine none of us listening, has ever experienced this type of situation paid and you got to bloody well spend it as soon as you get it. We're not out of that position. You could put that cash under your mattress or in a bank, and you can know next week you're going to be able to buy just about what you're able to buy this week. Now, slightly less, but just about.
Here's a tinfoil hot take for you. Is this the reason that many institutions bill monthly and biweekly so that you don't ever feel like you have to do that? Because the inclination would be like you would have that inclination.
I never thought about this enough.
Day or every hour. I just thought about it now. But it's
I do have to point out.
You can have me as a guest on your Wednesday show, and then we'll do it. I'll have you as a guest.
Home and home. Well, the euro, you touched upon this. Since its inception, it's lost 40% of its value. I think that was the number I've seen that was quoted, and that's with respect against the U.S. dollar. That's a massive amount in less than 2 decades, or just about 2 decades. And with respect to the U.S. dollar, there seems to be, because it's drilled within people's heads, the divine right, it must be superior and is the worldly asset, the world reserve asset. It's not the case. This doesn't have to be the case, but it's just, this is all we've known and all our people have known and have been taught. So it changing away from something that this is all they've learned, it's like telling somebody from North Korea that Kim Jong-un and his family weren't responsible for creating the sun, moon, and stars. It was something that blew their minds. Maybe not along to those, but it just goes to show you that if it's in your head, it's hard to change that, especially if you've been told this by birth. And United States, and I've mentioned this many times, they had an excellent, Canada too, an excellent opportunity. They blew it. You talked about how they blew it, and it was just done over a period of time, and it's absolute bullshit, because we never had the ability, or we never had the threat of a war. Three of our sides are protected because of natural barriers. It takes a lot of effort to invade Canada or the United States. And we're self-sufficient for a lot of things, energy, food. And so it's hugely important. And that's an advantage that a lot of countries don't have. Educated population, we got that check. Desirable place for immigrants to come in, great. Immigrants want to move in. Industry was already set up in a lot of, in these two countries, rail, roads, people were hungry to buy goods. Also, we had allies abroad, and they too are hungry for our goods, and we could export, or United States could export their culture to those countries. That's it. These are massive advantages that other countries would be dying to get. This shit was pissed away just because of short-sighted politicians, because of the election cycle. They're all dealing with four-year cycles. Let's deal with it for tomorrow. Today, tomorrow we'll deal with it once we get there. But you keep doing this, you keep adding to the fucking pile, and here we are: $31 trillion in debt, $1 trillion to service it annually. It can't sustain. It's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
But anyways, I got a few other stories. Bank of England, I'm not sure if you saw this, gaslighting by a policymaker over there. She was saying that the almost 900 billion British pounds that they used for QE, which was designed to prop up the economy during a lockout, has been wholly misunderstood. And check this one out. This is true gaslighting. So the inflation right now, the officially reported inflation in England is 10.4%. That's as of February. So that's quite high, double digits, official. So who knows what it is unofficially. And she was saying that it was driven by external factors such as the war in Ukraine, rather than the quantitative easing policy. And quote, this is direct quote from her: there is no link between QE and recent inflation outturns, end quote.
Don't worry about it. No one's ever found that link.
Can't connect these dots. No mention of pension funds being propped up by the Bank of England. Remember, they turned their back on domestic oil because they're no longer drilling and offshore from Scotland, at least. Windfall tax and those very same companies that provided them the energy. And fuck, even my 9-year-old would be able to figure this shit out better than what she's saying here. It's essentially blaming everything else and everyone else, not the decisions that they did to wreck the British pound. Take ownership, man. If you fucked up, just say you fucked up and go from there and try to fix the problem so they don't be repeated in the future. But you know what? This is simply just gaslighting by this Bank of England policymaker. Just absolute trash.
Did you see the interview between John Stewart and the defense minister in the States? I forget her name. I don't know. Defense minister might not even be your title, but he basically says, like, look, you know, if you guys lose a bunch of money, then yeah, I think it's fraudulent. And if you can't pass an audit, then yeah, I think that's a problem. And she goes, well, you know, just because we lost a bunch of money doesn't mean we can't pass an audit. It's like a minute 30, and Stewart is like trying his best not to jump out of the fucking chair. And she's talking to him like he's an idiot. And he's like, you know, look, if I give you $1 billion and then a year later I ask you what you spent it on and you don't know what you spent it on, I think that's waste. And he's like, the fact that you don't think it's waste really is the problem with the United States government. Like, you guys just don't care about any of this stuff. It's all money that's just coming out of nowhere for you, and it's causing problems now. And he's like, people can't get services. There's food insecurity on bases. This is a similar story. The amount of money that these guys have to spend now spinning up a story that they didn't have to spin up in 08 land. They didn't have to do it. There was no Twitter, no Facebook, none of this stuff. There's no information sharing, no speed of info like there is now. And so the first time they're trying to spin this thing up is during a crisis where they're losing control of the economy, the currency, inflation. They don't have the tools. They don't have the competency in-house to spin up a story. Where is the PR firm? I mean, the PR firm wants to handle the Zoomer celebrity who cheated on her boyfriend on Vanderpump Rules, right? And give her an Instagram post to put up. Is that a real thing? Yes, I know that because my wife watches Vanderpump Rules, okay? I've talked about
that. Is that a show?
It's a show. And so these guys have the PR firms want to take the Vanderpump Rules girl. They don't want to take the Department of Defense girl who just got tuned up by Jon Stewart at some TED Talk setting, right? And, you know, he's a guy who knows how to do an interview. He did The Daily Show for a long time. He has that famous clip with Tucker Carlson back when Tucker was working at CNN. Outstanding, talking about it like, look, man, people are not coming to my show for information. I follow a show where puppets are doing prank calls to people. Like, you guys are the one they're going to. That was the first instance, I think, for a lot of people of, hold on, wait a minute. These guys on the news are full of shit. And this lady sounds like she's full of shit too. You can't connect the dots between inflation and quantitative easing. Len, there's no two clearer dots to connect in all of modern economics. I know a lot of people in the MMT world think that's false, or you can pull it back, or it's not that big a deal, or whatever. Unless you want to live on honeycomb cereal and instant oats, that is the defining factor for you, whether or not there's inflation. It comes from quantitative easing. It always has. It always will. It is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon, as we know. So, yeah. Great to see these guys squirming, but the consequences are real for a lot of people. So as funny as it is to talk about that stuff, it just kind of sucks that people still, I think, don't quite understand what they've gotten themselves into.
One last Clown World story I'll bring up is the Federal Housing Administration, the FHA, announced last week on Wednesday that it's increasing the maximum term for a mortgage. And that's going to be previous length. The maximum term was 30 years or 360 months. Now it's 40 years or 480 months. So there you go. That's an easy way to solve the housing issue. If people can't afford it, just extend the amortization from 30 to 40 years. No problem. Just an extra 10 years. People could do it. And hopefully they could live long enough to see the end of that mortgage. If not, they'll pass it on to their kids. And, oh, you know what? Remortgage and add another 40 years there and kick that can down the road. You know what? By then, it'll probably be 50 years, 75 years, or 100 years. Who the hell knows? This is the answer to the problems. Just add an extra little bit. You know, it's inflation. It's inflation hitting the fucking mortgage markets. Yeah. The amortization. Totally. Just, man, inflate that shit away.
I had this conversation over Easter with my dad and his brothers, and I have a view that I think is a little more firmly entrenched and a little less malleable than they do from my time in Bitcoin. And we were talking about the entitlement system in Canada basically being defunct, and every entitlement system basically being defunct. And I was saying to them that, you know, there's people who I think, you know, mistakenly over the last 30 years of employment, whether you work for, I don't know, if you're a teacher or if you're a public servant or if you're a firefighter, police officer, whatever. If you were one of these people who are relying on their pension to make it through retirement, it's not going to hold you. It's not going to hold you anymore. So you're not going to be able to retire. And I was saying, you know, they were going, what do you mean? Like, the pensions are indexed to inflation. I said, inflation is a fake number. You know, the number of dollars you spend eating eggs, meat, going on vacations, things like that, it's too much. And I said, not only that, but the people who used to be able to buy your house, which was part of the Canadian retirement plan and still very much is, this downsizing and using some of that, gained equity over the course of your lifetime to enjoy your golden years, right? To sunset sort of into the distance there, to ride off into the distance. If the kids can't buy your house, then you can't retire. You have to keep living a certain lower quality of lifestyle, even if you paid your mortgage off. Now, you know, if you're in your 30s and you don't have any savings, and your house has got you underwater, and you have to do this extend and pretend. If your amortization went out to, you know, 50 years instead of 30 years, well, guess what? Even if your pension is indexed to inflation, you can't pay your mortgage without having a job. And that 70% or 65% of your best five, whatever those pensions are doing these days, it's not going to cover it.
It's easy. By the time you get your retirement, just add 40 more years.
Well, this is it, right?
Then it's cheaper, and then you could afford it with your CPP.
You're not going to be able to retire. And the younger generation is not going to be able to buy, and on the flywheel goes, right? And it's just problem after problem after problem. And nobody wants to talk about it. We talk about the immigration numbers on this show. We're not the only ones. This million plus, like that doesn't do anything to fix these problems. It doesn't solve inventory problems with housing. It doesn't make entitlements better. And Mike Campbell, friend of the show, Mike Campbell, says all the time, you know, we're paying 30, 40% more in taxes than we were 20 years ago. Are you getting 30% better services? Is healthcare 30% more available? Is your passport coming 30% more quickly? The answer is no across the board. You've not really received anything. In fact, the quality of services, you know, almost unanimously, I think, if you ask Canadians, has gone down. And it's a problem that starts and ends with the quality of the money.
There's something to this, though.
That sandbox.
50, 60 years ago, if you look at the tax structure, the majority of the taxes were imposed on businesses, and individuals paid far, far less percentage-wise tax than they do today. Now, the inverse has happened. Corporations pay less than they used to, and individuals like you and I pay more as in income tax. So it just the way it was, it just switched. And I would imagine that was due to lobbying and pressures from certain industries. That's essentially it. You're still collecting, like, we don't want to say the same amount. You're always collecting more and more every year, but we are paying more than corporations do. And this is, it's done purposely because there's more pandering towards corporations than they're pandering towards us, which is too bad because really we're the ones that vote. Corporations don't vote. They vote through donations, lobbying, and so forth, but not directly going to the ballot box and submitting a vote. So.
Yeah, man, I think you're right. I heard an interesting thing on McCormick's show today. I know you don't listen to Pete, but if you guys in the crowd are listening or want to listen to Pete, this idea of the vote that floats, so you can constantly change your allegiance during, you know, banker's hours, I guess. I don't know, like Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, you can change the party you support. And if there's ever a critical mass that's hit, another party takes over. Whoever has the most
votes. Is that like a recall type thing?
Not even. Sounds like just like a kind of a digital tally that's going at all times. And everyone votes. Maybe you do it once a week or once every 2 weeks or something like that. If the party who was in power 2 weeks ago continues to get support, then, you know, they stay in. If they don't, then it's a switch, right? Or something like that. It would be hard. The current system doesn't really have that kind of agility in terms of the legislative process. But, you know, we have to adapt, I think. And this is a story for another time. But anyway, interesting, because I think we're saying similar stuff, right? Like, the problems, we all see the problems, but changing them has become so difficult because the incentives at the highest levels don't make sense for the people who are there, and we pay the price, and it sucks. So that's part of the reason you Bitcoin is to get some money outside of that kind of, you know, that those mechanisms of power brokerage. They don't do you any favors.
Well, let's go to Clown World North. This is going to be a rather long episode. TD, not sure if you saw this. I think you did. It seems to be the most shorted bank in the world. I don't know why they shorter.
They have U.S. exposure. That's the exposure. And then still the float. I think you said this. It's still like what, 2% of the float.
It's very
like
small. Yeah. In comparison to others, like MicroStrategy, for instance, is shorted way more than TD is by percentage. But still, nonetheless, if you compare it to other banks, it's shorted more than JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, TD. I mean, they do have some exposure in the United States, but do they have by percentage more exposure than, say, JP Morgan does or Bank of America? I don't have enough information to say on the fly, no, but what the heck do I know? But it just goes to show you that even here in Canada, we talk about how protected our banking system is and all that nonsense. Well, shorters out there, they're looking at one of our biggest banks, the second largest bank in Canada, TD, and they're targeting this, and they're saying this is the one we believe is going to be collapsing next. Imagine that. Is there going to be a bank run? I don't know. Maybe. But certainly somebody or a lot of people are saying that this thing is going to come crashing down, at least the stock price. So, yeah, something to consider. It's definitely food for thought.
I have no real comment on that. Just that the U.S. exposure is a big deal. I'll mention that Keith Dicker was saying that TD is the first major in Canada to really turn around its mortgage lending. So they're about 30 or 40 basis points less than every other big bank in the country right now. So maybe they see conditions and rates dropping and are trying to lock people in before that happens. Interesting thought. I don't know if that's related to the short, but it will be related to the short if things don't go that well for them.
Yeah, if they start raising yeah. rates and there's people that are defaulting. It's an interesting gamble. You know, at the very least, what could go wrong? They'll get bailed out. So take infinite risk and they got 100% protection. I would do the exact same thing. SIBA, we really don't talk about this. It's a Canada Emergency Business Account. Okay, so this is a federal support program for businesses and nonprofits that are struggling with the pandemic. This happened 3 years ago now. And the program provided government-backed loans to eligible borrowers with non-deferrable expenses. Under the program, SIBA loans are interest-free until December 31st, 2023, and no principal repayment is required before that date. Unreal. Nearly 900,000 businesses were approved for that program. Total dollar value is around $50 billion dished out. In terms of how many businesses has paid back this, only 13% of businesses, or about $5.7 billion, has been paid back to date. Financial institutions offered loans up to $60,000 backed by federal government money. And a portion of each loan was forgivable, Joey. This is something that wasn't really reported. I believe that number is around 25%. So they gave out up to $60,000 and 25% or so of that did not have to be repaid. Hopefully they bought Bitcoin. It's free money if you ask me. And we also have the CFIB, Canadian Federation for Independent Businesses, is throwing out a petition out there asking for the whole loan, the whole SIBA loan, to be forgiven. And you're also, not only them, but also another group is asking for an extension for the deadline to pay back. I mentioned December 31st of this year, because as you're saying, small businesses are struggling. I get that. And they're saying that businesses right now are operating on sales that are below the pre-pandemic level. So not only are they operating in an environment that there is less disposable income from consumers and higher interest rates, so if they're carrying any debt, they got to pay more of it back. They're also making less or doing less sales than they were pre-pandemic. So this is a three-pronged attack that is nailing them. And they also have this sword above them ready to drop because they have to pay back whatever loan that they borrowed. And that's up to $60,000, but a percentage of that, 25%, potentially could have been forgiven. So still, this is something that could rug pull a lot of businesses in Canada. A ticking time bomb. I have a feeling they're going to extend the deadline. It just seems vogue of the day. Just kick the can down the road and we'll deal with it later on. But who knows?
That's all bullshit. I'll start with one question for you. When was the last time you had a loan forgiven by the federal government?
I could tell you I haven't had a loan forgiven, period. I don't care about federal, private. There's been no loan.
So, okay, that's number one. Okay, I take issue with that big time. Number two is that the business numbers, okay, I think we talked about this before. If not, I'll dive into it here briefly, because I want to watch Succession after we're done. Honestly, I got to watch last night's episode. The stuff about businesses and COVID, and specifically coming out of the pandemic, business formation. Okay, Biden, Trudeau, and others have relied on this data to paint a rosier picture of economic recovery than actually exists. And I'll tell you how they did this. When the announcement came that businesses were going to be given these huge loans under very generous terms during COVID, tons of people spun up businesses. I personally know several people who spun up businesses doing stuff like building decks and built one deck, building those outdoor dining things, built one outdoor dining thing. And what they've done is take the money, hoping that they wouldn't have to pay it back, at least not with interest, at least not in full. And as a result, the governments that employed these programs, that offered these programs, had to make a decision. Do we allow these businesses to take the loans and even though we know that some of them are basically fraudulent businesses? Or do we tell them no and have them go to the media and say, we couldn't get the loan, we just want to help during COVID, blah, 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 blah. They chose the former and now they're paying the price. Those businesses never had any intention of paying back. They're barely businesses. And like you said, they use the money for God knows what for the last 3 years. I personally don't have a view on whether or not a small business who made it through COVID should have trouble surviving in an economic downturn. I would imagine
a fair number of them use the money in a manner to ensure that they stay afloat.
Yeah, they stayed afloat.
Like they paid rent or
there's probably a bunch. You're right. Mm-hmm. But what I don't have a view on is whether or not I should be sympathetic to those businesses who didn't, especially during a time like 2021 and 22, the first half of 22 and all of 21, the market conditions were loose, man. Interest rates were zero. Everyone was spending. All the data was pointing, no recession, soft landing, rates low, blah, blah, blah. The businesses have to prepare to pay back loans they take. And so I don't know that I sympathize, but I do think there's something to be said about all these fraudulent businesses who are going to get this money for free now because they say they can't pay it back or never really did any business or whatever.
It's not for free yet. Nothing has been decided.
It's going to be free. It's always fucking free. It's always fucking free. They just did this other thing with the student loans. No more interest on that. We talked about that last week. Why not this too? Whatever. Why not this too? They'll do it.
I think the easiest way to get around this is just extend the deadline to 2024 or 2025, because this is something they can say, we'll deal with it once we get there. And then hopefully at that time, this is the easiest way to get around it without committing.
I mean, no matter how you slice this, they're getting money for free, right? They're not paying interest. They're investing, like whatever. If the economic conditions turn around, the money will have grown.
No
matter how you slice this, it's nuts.
I hope that there have been some businesses that were smart enough to have taken the money and then give it back, but to keep the interest, because if 25% from what's been read,
now you can buy a 5% GIC or whatever, right? You're sitting pretty.
Could you imagine, like, man, the opportunity, like
throwing you a bone. I don't know.
Anyways, I got three more stories on the Canadian side I want to talk about, and one is food prices in Canada, and it's expected that it's going to keep going up by another 5-7% in 2023. This is according to Canada's food price report. And this is going to piss off some MP that we know that this guy probably checks his time on a Rolex, drives around in a BMW and sports a Canada Goose. And not just he, but also his young child, Canada Goose clothing. I understand the message, but you have to walk the walk too. Until I see you driving a late 90s model beige Corolla, you're just talking fucking shit. You know, keep driving your BMW, because the message, it goes in one ear and out the other for me. They're saying that the forecast for food, it's going to be going up by more than $1,000 for the average family of four in 2023. And they're basing this off the increase in vegetables, dairy, and meat. And they're attributing this to increased energy costs. And furthermore, one in three Canadians believe grocery store price gouging is the main reason for food price increases. This is a survey that was done by, gosh, I forget who it is. Oh, Dalhousie University. That's the one that did it. So get this. This is absolutely incredible stuff. Between 30 and 33% of respondents in BC, Alberta, Ontario, New Brunswick, and Manitoba, so those five provinces, they answered price gouging was the main reason behind the price hikes. But get this, respondents from Quebec and Saskatchewan, very smart people over there, they selected inflation / monetary / fiscal policies as the top reason why there's a price increase in the food cost. Man, the people in Saskatchewan and Quebec, they know. They understand what's going on. But that is their real reason. It's not price gouging. It's everything has gone up. You flood the market with more money. Well, there's more money chasing the same goods, and it's you have less value then that's behind it, because money itself, it's the faith in it having a potential value or some value. When there's more of it floating around, it could buy less. That's just the reality of it. It's backed by nothing. It's totally faith-based, and that's it. It's not price gouging. It's adding money to the market. That is it.
Totally. And it's worth noting here in the Business Outlook survey that the Bank of Canada conducts, I think it's Bank of Canada conducts this survey. most firms still think inflation is going to be well above 2% until 2025. So don't expect the quote unquote price gouging to stop anytime soon. They've lost faith the same way that you and I have lost faith in projections, predictions, and protections that the Bank of Canada used to offer them. And so I don't expect that this is going to change. The price gouging thing makes me laugh every single time. I think that the best case scenario for the price gouge truthers is that the companies are passing through inflation to consumers finally, after not doing so for 2 years, because they thought things were going to go, they thought things were going to kind of cool down a bit. They never did. And now Galen Weston, in a true, like, I don't know what to make of this. Like, it's a read the room moment. I think gave himself a $55 million raise or something like that. Like,
the optics are awful.
They're terrible, but it's a symptom of a problem that he didn't cause. And you can agree or disagree with that. I would say you'd be incorrect if you disagreed, but we're open to debate here on the CBP. That's what we do. So I don't know, Len, it seems to me like a lot of businesses expect this to continue. And you can say that, well, businesses will change their tune, blah, blah, blah. Their thinking dictates the broader economy's behavior. It dictates prices, and so dictates spending, and so dictates discretionary income allocation, things like that. It's not that hard to figure this stuff out. And I just think that if you're not paying attention to what SMEs and maybe also, you know, the sort of giant multinationals or nationals, I guess, in Loblaw's cases, if you're not paying attention to what they're doing, then what are you paying attention to? You certainly can't be Bank of Canada projections at this point, right? Like, how much more you have to see. Also, you know, Len, if things were going really well and we expected those numbers to come down, we wouldn't see the Minister of Justice looking to rescind natural resource contracts from provinces. That's a, you know what, Len?
I thought that was enshrined in the Canada Act.
And that's a way we know things are going to get better when they're trying to like repatriate basically oil and commodity ownership and production. And are you fucking kidding me?
No, I don't think they could do that.
They're going to try.
Section 92 and 94. And I think it's the Canada Act. I forget.
They're trying enough that the Premier of Saskatchewan or Manitoba, I saw Scott Moe. And Danielle Smith today in Alberta releasing statements. We're not going to let them do it.
I don't think they can. I understand what they're trying to. They can say whatever they want, and maybe I'm wrong.
Why would they even say it? This is not a good sign. You're trying to calm nerves. Okay, who's the guy, Seamus O'Regan, who's constantly saying we're rubbing raw the nerves of Canadians? This is rubbing people's nerves raw, sir. Making an announcement like this at the federal level. Or leaking this from the federal level saying we're going to try and repatriate commodities. Hey, that's not good. People are not going to be happy about that. And they're going to wonder why. That's going to cause uncertainty. That's going to cause doubt.
A lot of people are probably not even going to focus on that. I'm going to explain why. Because this story here is going to explain how dire of a situation things are for a lot of Canadians. And their focus is on this rather than what's going on with taking over provinces' energy production or their energy sources. One in three Canadians are in bad or terrible financial shape. This is according to an Angus Reid survey. And Angus Reid was a no coiner of the week, actually, not too long ago. 34% of Canadians are specifically, I mentioned one in three, that's 34% are in bad or terrible shape. And this is up 6 percentage points from last July. So it's gone up a little bit since then. And by comparison, only 27% were in this situation in April 2020. So this is a steady increase. Number go up here. And I'm wondering if this is going to impact the Bank of Canada's rate hike decisions moving forward when they see a lot of people are in what they quote bad or terrible shape. But I got more information here that's going to give you some light. 67% of Canadians say that they've reduced their discretionary spending due to the rising cost of living. 67%. And as many as 40% are withdrawing money from accounts they don't normally touch. 35% delayed contributions to their RRSP and TFSA. 13% say they borrowed money from family and friends. 43% of Canadians are delaying a major purchase such as a home, car, or a major appliance. So these are things that are impact the economy as a whole. 11% have sold an asset like a vehicle or stocks, and 8% have taken out a bank loan. This, I'm telling you, Joey, this is showing that a large number of people are in dire straits. They are just a few paychecks away from financial doom. That is why they could talk about doing whatever they want with the provincial energy situation, because people's attention is on their financial situation, which is fucking pathetic. And it's a sad state. How far have we fallen as a in very short period of time? You're talking about the United States. Canada's in the same position. Yeah. We are in a bad state over here. It's not gonna get any better. There's gonna be some more opportunities for helicopter money to help people out, and this is gonna just continually create more and more problems, more inflation, and here we are, and it's never gonna end. But there you go. That's all I gotta say for that. And I do have one more story I want to touch on, but I just want to hear your thoughts on this.
We talked about this before. The problem that people have is not that they don't know something is wrong. It's that they don't have the time or the bandwidth to look into what the issue is. And so they take at face things like, you know, gouging and, I don't know, the budget, you know, helping every Canadian with $400 or whatever the number is. They have no choice but to accept it, because if they don't, then they're not going to eat. And, you know, much the same way that every Canadian is really on a variable rate mortgage because the terms are so short here. You know, as more things like cars, refrigerators, roofs, driveways, you know, you name it, come due, I think you'll start to see a change, I hope anyway, in the way people think about not only their own books, but the books of the governments they elect and the books of the country in which they live. This is important stuff. And it's been on the back burner for a long time because times were good, but times are not that good anymore for a lot of people. And I hope that they take into consideration why, what was the path we took to get here, and how do we make sure we don't take it again?
I think it's done. I mean, examining what has happened, I think this is something you just can't patch up. You have to blow it up and start from scratch. That's the reality of it. Maybe. But one last thing I'm going to mention on the Canadian side, the Canadian job market beat expectations yet again. So in March, they added 34,000, almost 35,000 jobs. The estimate was 7,500, quite an increase. But this also follows previous months. In fact, one of them really blew up the expectations out of the water. Back in December, 104,000 jobs were created and 5,000 were expected. January, 150,000 jobs were created. Only 15,000 were expected. February, 21,000 jobs were created. 10,000 were the estimated number. So every time the number 3x, 4x's, 10x's, some or even way, way higher, 104 versus 5. I think that's 20x, could be wrong. It is 20x. It's insane. They're just pulling numbers out of fucking thin air. All these tech jobs are just being burned. Nobody's working them. People are working at fucking Wendy's or Chipotle or where the fuck. But at Chipotle, you get 100K.
If you second jobs too, don't forget about those.
Fucking so, man, Uber too.
What does Suretsky always say on Looney Hour? He's like the bank, the Canada random number generator, the jobs number.
Yeah, that's what it is.
How can you be so far off your projections? Oh, what are we talking about? It's like a 10x. Like what? How?
You know. The weather people, I have more faith in them predicting the weather a week away than I do these people with the fucking giant. And the weather is a total crapshoot when you're talking 7 days out.
Yeah.
It's insane how fucking far off these guys are. Yeah. These numbers, and they could report whatever fuck they want. I do not digest it. I see it, I laugh, and I go on. There's no truth to these fucking numbers.
No,
none.
You can't. No, you can't. And I only have one comment here. 51% of jobs. Okay. Everyone remember, 51% of jobs are paid for with printed money since the beginning of COVID. You make of that what you will, but that's an important stat to keep in mind as we continue to enjoy the decline from our Bitcoin citadels here in Southern Ontario. Are we almost done? Like what is going on here? It's an hour 40 here. What's going on? We're done. Time.
We could talk a little bit in the after show. That's it for the podcast.
I'm tapped out here, man.
I got another 15, 20 story. No, okay. I got a couple I want to talk about.
We got a couple minutes for the after show here. Do you have a no coiner? We don't want to skip that.
No Bitcoin or no no coiner. We're going to
skip it today. If you want to see a no coiner, go to Mark Jeftovic's Twitter page there. He tagged the no coiner that we're not going to talk about, but
feel free to have a look.
Anyway, great show tonight, buddy. Happy about the price pump, happy about summertime being here, happy that we have our friends in the chat and our enemies probably as well. So
New York Times is also talking about friends and enemies as well, so
yeah, everybody's ripping this off. Gotta get that trademarked. Anyway, God bless everyone. We'll talk to you.
Price of Bitcoin.
We do it at the end too. We do.
Holy yeah, yeah. I'll write it off. Like
29,764 right now.
Ooh. It went up. Yeah. See, Canadian is 40,133 and Singapore dollars 39,585. Gonna have to throw that.
Hey, don't forget the conference, Canadian Bitcoin conference. I made my reservations today. I'll be staying with Green Candle for a couple of days in Toronto. So we got a place out there. Should be good, man. If you're in the area, buy a ticket. You can head over to, I think it's CanadianBitconference.com. Maybe you're CanadianBitconference.com.
Just type Canadian Bitcoin Conference.
Yeah, you'll find it. Or bug Plate Liquor on Twitter. Send him a DM.
Yeah.
Send him nudes or whatever you got to do.
Who, by the way, said 30,000 by end of day. He said it's 8 o'clock this morning. So I just want to state that he made a prediction.
Saying that for like a week. He's been saying that every day for like a week.
He said it this morning.
$29,950. Here we go. $30,000.
Play licking pleb. I'm giving you kudos here. Good job with that fucking prediction, buddy.
Good job, boys and girls. We'll talk to you when we talk to you. Take care.
Yeah, take care and PV.